I'm great. Welcome back to Talking Backwards. I am Dave Jackson. I'm joined by Patrick Mahan.
Hey, everybody.
And even Tyler Mullins.
Hey, everybody.
This is season 2, episode
trademarked.
19. Hey, yeah, everybody.
That's Patrick's sign on.
Well, it sounded like you were about to do the Pat stats as well.
You can't piggyback. I was about to take over Pat stats. And so, you know, we're all getting a little too deep into each other's pies. Let's back up, let's take our fingers out.
As long as it's a cherry pie.
Get your hand out of my pie.
That was a really strange way to say that. We're stepping on each other's toes a little bit, so let's back it up. And,
can we talk about pie for a second?
We can talk about a lot of pie. We can talk about three pies to a person.
I don't know that we've talked about them much, but we'll bring it up now. You know, the Log Lady, after Twin Peaks went off the air, David Lynch filmed these Log Lady intros for when Twin Peaks was doing reruns on Bravo. Mm-hmm. I believe it was Bravo. But anyway, so the intro for this one is all about pie.
Oh.
Dave, I don't know if you'd like to read it. I've always enjoyed your Log Lady impersonation.
I believe I can do that. All right,
let's
are you ready?
Yeah. For the folks at home, here's Dave, little Davy Jackson as the Log Lady.
Little Davy Jackson?
That's the one.
Pie. Whoever invented the pie. Here was a great person. In Twin Peaks, we specialize in cherry pie and huckleberry pie. We do have many other types of pie, and at the Double R Diner, Norma knows how to make them all better than anyone I have ever known. I hope Norma likes me. I know I like her and respect her. I have spit my pitch gum out of my mouth onto her walls and floors and sometimes onto her booths. Sometimes I get angry and do things I'm not proud of. I do love Norma's pies. I love pie with coffee.
That's it. Thank you.
That is it. Like, what is this?
I think we all learned a lot about the Log Lady.
I think she has some beef with Norma.
Log Lady's got beef?
She's got beef.
Oh, wow.
But she respects her.
She does. Anyway,
that's what we need to take away from this.
Yeah, let's get on into season 2, episode 19, episode 26, but 27th overall.
They call it Variations on Relations.
Yes, it was directed by Jonathan Sanger. Mm-hmm. Not Singer. Sanger. It was written by Harley Payton and Mark Frost.
Now, Jonathan Sanger, where might somebody recognize him from?
Jonathan Sanger, well, he was a producer of The Elephant Man, David Lynch's film.
1980.
I'm sure he's done other things, but
we also
that's a connection to David Lynch.
He also was with producers 2005 and Vanilla Sky in 2001, so he's used to some weird stuff.
Is that why Tom Cruise was in the last episode?
There's the connection, yeah.
That's
totally.
The connection. That's why he was a bookhouse boy. It's nice to have Mark Frost back on the writing this week. Before we also just really deep dive in, have you guys been enjoying the weather updates this week from David Lynch?
Yes.
I admittedly have not watched those.
What?
Who are you?
I know you've been blowing up the messenger with these YouTube links. I haven't said it. I always get them when I'm at work, typically, or when I'm in the middle of something, and I don't think to go back and pop them off.
Like 30 seconds of your day. It's David Lynch giving you the current weather every morning from Los Angeles.
Gotcha.
Which, I know that the LA weather is useful to us, as we are not in LA.
Yeah, definitely.
But boy, was it yesterday? Man, his coffee was piping hot.
It's May 13, 2020, and it's a Wednesday. Here in LA, a beautiful sunny morning. Very still, one or two little clouds floating by, 59 degrees Fahrenheit, 15 Celsius. Have a great day.
That's it.
Yep, and that's every day. It's the most pleasant thing. So I didn't know this. I saw that he used to do this like 10 years ago for like a long time. You can find the old ones on YouTube. But suddenly he just started doing this again, and it's, I wish he had been doing this the whole time that we've been at home during this time. Because truly, it does bring a smile to my face. He usually posts them around, we're on the East Coast, so noon our time, but it's a joy. And I've been sharing them on our Twitter.
Yeah.
Let's dive into variations on relations.
We're going back to the Owl Cave first. The gang is back. I'm not sure why they left to begin with. They just kind of came in, they found the petroglyph. And I guess they called it a day?
Yeah, what did they need to come back for?
Yeah, so they came in, they found this petroglyph. They said it was going to be wondrous and strange. Went away, gave Wynn and Merle the window to come in and, you know, turn the dial and make the things happen in the cave. And I guess they just came right back. What they find is a whole bunch of new petroglyphs on the wall. This big, intricate drawing, this map of different things interconnected. And I couldn't really tell if this is what Wynn and Merle did while he was there, or if turning the handle is what made this appear.
I think that's what made it appear. I don't think it was there before.
Yeah, that seems like something that would have stood out.
Right.
But that was the only part of that really confused me, was that they had to come back to find this. Like, I know that Wynn and Merle had to be the one to figure out to turn it upside down.
Right.
And so they would have missed this before. I'm just not sure why they left in the first place.
Yeah.
Like, they walked in, something really cool. Let's go home, boys.
It's like in the summer when you would play with your friends, but you had to go home for dinner, and then you came and hung out again after.
It's exactly like that.
Like, your recess story had to be put on pause till the next day.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then the Black Wizard comes up and, time to come inside.
Oh, man.
Next time, guys. Yeah, it is exactly like that, isn't it? Cooper wants Andy to recreate the drawing from the wall to scale later. So he gives him that task. Then Speaking of Wynn and Merle, we go back to his cabin in the woods.
Yes.
He's recounting his stories about the White Lodge and the Black Lodge.
Yeah, I like that that's come back, because we haven't heard about those. Briggs brought it up, the White Lodge, a few times, but the Black Lodge was only ever brought up by Hawk, I believe.
Yes. And anytime anybody has brought up the White Lodge, they've been interrupted. So this is the first time we get any information on the lore of it.
Yeah.
It sounds like it's basically a heaven-like place.
It's because no one in this cabin is going to interrupt Wyndham.
Right. Well,
someone tries, I guess.
Someone tries, yeah.
Yes.
But so as he's going on about his description of the White Lodge, saying that this is basically heaven, and then goes on to say, like, this is a terrible idea. Like, who would want a place like this when you could be a deity of your own with the Black Lodge? And he gets into that. Then we scoot over to some guy.
Yep.
So this is Ted Raimi playing this character, as of yet unnamed. And he steals the scene. He steals this episode, honestly.
Yeah, he's our heavy metal drifter.
Yeah.
Like, another drifter.
That's a cool story, man, but isn't there supposed to be some beer?
I also like that he just repeats the information about the Black Lodge, the White Lodge. I just like that it's funny because the character doesn't come across as someone who would at least be paying attention to the words.
Yeah.
His focus is on one thing, which was beer. Right. So the fact that he repeated that information, I thought was just interesting, because he didn't seem like the kind of guy who would care.
Well, when you are motivated by something and the path there has to do with information, you focus up. Like, if you're trying to get beer and somebody's like, listen to the story and you'll get beer, they listen to the story.
Yeah.
But that's not quite what he's in for by the end of the day. My guy just wants a beer, but he is now in over his head with Wynn and Merle. So we cross over from him to this machine that's set up, to Leo, to our heavy metal drifter, to a, I guess, Commodore 64 that has the petroglyph drawn on it.
It looks like it.
Just this really, really old computer that looks like it was MS painted onto the screen.
I love it.
Yeah, I loved it too. I thought it was a nice touch.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Looks like it was drawn on a Socrates.
All right. We're going to go to the Martell Manor.
Ooh.
Where Pete's hung up on his Josie poem.
Is he writing it?
I think he's writing it.
And he's like,
our human rhyming dictionary is trying to finish off his ode to Josie.
It's not great.
I think that I shall never see.
And then Kathy shows up.
Mm-hmm. Kath's on the line. She has brought in a box that Thomas Eckhart left her.
Not a tackle box, unfortunately, for Pete.
It is not.
Just a black box.
Doesn't even have a hole for a key. This is a puzzle box.
Yeah.
So the way Pete knows about this is because he was on Guam during some R&R with the Doolittle twins, and they happened upon one of these. Happened upon one of these puzzle boxes. And according to him, it could take years to solve it because you have to put the pieces just so.
Yeah.
I want to try it. Like, I know that they kind of accidentally pop it open later, but I would like to give this thing a go myself with just no prompts, no context. Hand me a box and say, open this, and I'll figure it out.
You should buy one.
I could buy one. If anybody listening has access to a puzzle box that you would like to send me, slide into our DMs at Talking Backwards Pod on Instagram and let me know, because I am into it. All right. Let's go to the double R then.
Billy and Shelly.
Oh, Bobby and Shelly?
Billy. Billy and Shelly. Bobby and Shelly.
Are you hung up on Billy Zane?
I'm ready for him to die.
That is harsh.
We can be harsh about Bobby because I'm back to hating him.
Oh, he sucks.
He sucks again. So much. He is pretty much telling Shelly that she can get far in life by being beautiful. And that by entering the Miss Twin Peaks contest, she can enact change his way. And since Bobby's in charge.
Bobby is in charge.
He thinks she's going to do it.
He's a big boss man.
Not for long.
Yeah, not for long, right? He does get pretty well checked later. If we get another look at Milford and Bride.
Where we find out that she's interested in entering the Miss Twin Peaks contest. Mm-hmm. And this is where we also find out that our beloved mayor is a judge, and she basically wants him to rig the contest so she can win.
Yeah, she doesn't want to enter the contest. She wants to win the contest.
I've given a speech or two in my day.
And yeah, she calls him lover.
Which I hated.
And she gives him
I hated that. I'm not a big fan of anybody using the term lover, period. Like, this is awful.
Then she gives him the kiss of death.
Yeah.
So he's going to die soon.
She's going to kill him with sex.
And then, no, she is a sneaky snake, and I hate her.
Officially.
Confirmed. Big red stamp. Hate.
I liked, there was a little bit of a parallel here that I liked. Bobby was just telling Shelly about how beautiful people always get what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And then we pan over to them, and Lana is trying to get what she wants because she's pretty.
Attractive.
Right,
yeah.
So I really liked that being back to back. There we go.
All right, there it is. Yeah, that was cool. Coop is being served by Annie once again. He's come in to get some coffee and donuts for the office. Two black, two white, dozen donuts.
You think he's excited to be back in the FBI?
It certainly seems so. He's got his jacket on. He's ready to rock.
Yeah.
The same handmade jacket that was spotted
before.
It
was before. Made by he got from his mom's Etsy shop.
Tyler, did you catch the soup of the day here?
I did. It was, what was it? A hearty beaver broth.
Beaver. Nothing like some hearty beaver broth. Mm.
And it's just the broth? There's nothing else in it?
That's it.
Well, if your broth is hearty enough, I guess you can sell it on its own merits.
That's right.
It has merit.
Coop invites Annie out for a nature study?
A nature study, yeah. Talking to her gives him a tingle, and he doesn't think it's anything to do with coffee.
I like the moment there with Shelly, too, because, it was funny before. She was like, I'm not interested at all. Annie, that is. And
yeah.
you know, Shelley just smiles at her here, like, yeah, told you so.
Like, I see you.
Yep.
Ancient Chinese secret, huh? It's that kind of look, like,
Calgon?
No.
Is this where we have the donuts?
Yeah, it says donuts, donuts on the box.
Donuts, donuts in the Dunkin' donuts font.
Mm-hmm. Shelley quotes the Windham Earl poem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because Bobby, right, on his way out is like, Shelley, you're beautiful. Use it. Bobby out.
Yeah. And
like, what is all this worth if thou kiss not me?
Coop's ears perk up. He knows exactly the poem.
Ends up confiscating her section of the torn poem. And that leads directly into the police station in the next scene.
Yep.
We've got Truman and Cooper together, and they are kind of analyzing the three different girls' poems.
Yeah.
I think Cooper pretty well knows scene. What's going on already.
Yeah. This is a great scene. He mentions the poems. He mentions Windham Earl's stuff. And then, of course, the stuff they found at Owl Cave. He thinks there is a connection. While it may not seem like it, he's getting an intuition that there is a connection between all of these things. Yeah, he's asking Major Briggs for help.
And I think Briggs wants to help, but he knows more than he's telling them, for sure, that's going on. And I think he's concerned for everyone's safety if he does divulge what he knows.
Yeah. That's, he basically says that he'll help if it prevents future loss of life.
Which, I respect that.
Yeah. So I still want to know even just what he might know about Windham Earl. Because if they were both involved with Project Blue Book, I feel like they would know each other.
Speaking of Project Blue Book,
Does anybody watch that?
What's that?
On the History Channel?
What's that?
Project Blue Book.
Is there something on the History Channel called Project Blue Book?
No. Yeah.
Is there for real, though?
Yeah.
For real?
I'm going to check it out.
Yes.
I'll have to check it out. Is it about Briggs?
I wish. It's a buddy cop TV show about Briggs and Windham Earl.
I do love in the scene that Briggs mentions that he thinks he has seen the map, the drawing, the petroglyph that Andy has drawn from a dream.
Yeah, as Andy is replicating it, he kind of guides him.
Makes a mistake.
He says, I think that line goes down instead of up.
Yeah.
How would you know that?
Yeah. Very interesting. I pointed out to Tyler, too, there is a drawing in it of a giant person and a small person.
Very notable. Very at the forefront, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I really liked, as he's kind of contemplating whether or not to tell what he knows, he has these visions, these flashbacks that we get to see as the viewer, through the power of magic of television.
The vision.
We have a hooded person. We have space. We have an owl. We have fire.
Walk with me.
Yeah, it's a trippy 4 seconds.
It is. It all happens at once, and then it's just over.
Yep.
Yeah, and then we have Coop doing a line of cocaine.
That is what it looks like when you're fast forward through the scene.
Yeah, when you're scrubbing the episode, it definitely looks like he's doing a thick line and then popping back up. Just like, guys, I got a theory.
Oh, man.
No, listen.
Yeah. But the other major important thing that happens here is...
where are all these gnats coming from?
Cooper realizes that it's Leo's handwriting. Hawk brings in Leo's arrest report, and the handwriting matches. Or Tyler, does it?
It does not.
The other thing, it doesn't. I don't know. I rewatched it. I was like, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not a handwriting analysis.
Yeah,
this is
I don't know.
Saying the Owl Cave symbol matches Briggs' tattoo.
Yeah,
you think it's the same? It's just a similar situation as that.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like, it's physically impossible for us to have one person write the same thing on two different pieces of paper.
Yep.
That we can't have that. You write this and you write the other one. And we'll say they match.
Anything else on this scene?
I don't think so.
Back to the Great Northern.
Hard close-up of Dick's nose. Still recovering from his pine weasel bite.
Yeah.
So Ben Horn kind of approaches him about the damage to his nose. And what we really ultimately get from the scene is that Dick plans on getting as much money out of Ben Horn for his injury as possible, since he was emceeing the event that got him bitten by the animal he's so desperately trying to defend. And I really like Ben's quote here.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes the urge to do bad is nearly overpowering.
Mm-hmm.
Bite out of my carrot that's in my pocket.
Yep. And I felt like he wished that was a cigar so bad just then.
Oh, yeah.
Just like with the fury he bit the carrot.
It's
like,
I do. I get the.
I can't smoke this carrot, but if I could.
I always think about that one scene. I think it was in. I think it's in Demons or Lonely Souls. I mean, no, it's Lonely Souls, I think, when he comes running down the hall smoking the cigar at the Great mm-hmm. Northern.
Yeah.
When Mike's, like, freaking out. So I always just think, when I think of Ben having a cigar, I think of that scene.
I was like, I bet the air quality inside the Great Northern has vastly improved since he stopped smoking.
Yeah.
Because
he made that change? Yeah, you think he probably, yeah, well, yeah, that's true. I mean, he's probably the only one we ever saw smoking, but I was like, mm-hmm. I wonder if that was a change they made or if that was always in place. He just got to smoke because he was the boss.
It makes you wonder.
I'm sure it changed after this, now that he's, you know, more environmentally friendly and...
Yeah, we get, I think the whole purpose of this scene is to see that Dick, for all his attempts at bettering himself for Lucy's view of him, at his core, still sucks.
Yeah.
A lot. Like, the Big Brother thing didn't work out, and he's now really heavily involved with goings-on at the Great Northern. And, like, why is this our go-to guy for events now? Because he doesn't really have the clout. He's in men's fashions.
Right.
And nobody seems to like him at face value.
Yeah.
Like, why is this the guy that we're going to say, hey, you're going to be in charge of these events from now on?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't dig it. He still sucks, and we see that he sucks.
True.
And I'm with Ben. Like, he gives me an overpowering urge to be bad to him. To the cabin again. We're back to Ted Raimi.
Yeah.
In his paper mache pawn trap.
How do I get out of here, man?
You don't. So, has this been the point of the arrows the whole time? Like, this was his plan?
Yes. This was that pointless scene from three episodes ago where Leo was sharpening the arrows. Yeah, this is what it's all led up to.
I need the one arrow sharp enough to kill somebody instantly. Yeah, so Ted Raimi's stuck in his chest trap. He keeps asking dodgy questions about, like, hey, man, so when do I get out of here? What are you doing? What's up with the arrow, man?
I don't like practical jokes.
Yeah, I got to tell you, man, I'm not a big fan of practical jokes. And this is the first time that we see slave labor Leo kind of be resistant.
Yeah.
He's like, Windermere wants him to bring him an arrow, and Leo just says no at one point, and that gets him zapped.
Yeah, and we start wasting a bunch of beer.
Man, Squid zapping the geek, how am I going to get my beer?
Yeah, beer's spilling all over the floor, buddy.
Yeah, eventually Leo complies and brings Windham an arrow. I'm sorry, but I laughed out loud at Ted Raimi's death.
Yeah.
So he pulls it back and lets it rip. He has a short monologue before he kills him, about how he can be certain of where his soul goes, as this has been the eternal question of man, is what happens when we die. He's like, and you, lucky boy. And then a cut shot to Ted Raimi, just... I'm sorry, I loved it. I didn't want to see him go yet. I wanted one more episode with a little bit of this character.
Yeah.
Leo's reaction to this is hilarious.
It's pretty good.
It's just a close-up, and he's like...
Mm-hmm.
Just the quivering shock of what's just happened. Did you really not think he was about to shoot an arrow into this man?
Oh.
But no, I love that. I'm sorry, I'm laughing about it because, like, it is a character death. And it death is not funny inherently. But when he lets this arrow rip and the cutback is immediately...
It's all the cut. Yeah, it's the cuts. It's
it's half a second and it cuts to him with his head cocked, mouth agape, and blood running out of it immediately. What?
And that's a short arrow, and it's still sticking out of the pawn piece, and There's no way. Maybe it cut him, but it definitely didn't kill him.
Yeah, it may have nicked him. And this is so.
Maybe he's weak.
This is an extremely Sam Raimi shot. Like if you've ever seen Evil Dead.
Oh yeah.
Like just the amount of death after a small incident is on brand. Like the fact that he got clipped and then immediately was like bussing blood capsules out of his mouth is a very Raimi move. And I really appreciated it.
Back to the Roadhouse.
This is our Miss Twin Peaks committee.
Yes, we have a nice picture of, I guess, Elvira was the previous Miss Twin Peaks winner.
Yep. Yep, that's our cover girl.
Yep.
This is going to be a very exciting year.
Yeah, so Ben is there, and mm-hmm. he's trying to persuade Doc Hayward, Pete Martell, and the mayor, who are, I guess, all three of them are the judges.
What a panel.
The three oldest guys in town.
Three old white men.
Yep.
This is a gathering of elders.
Yeah. Yeah.
These are the only men qualified for such a competition.
He's there basically just saying the theme should be Stop Ghostwood, Save Our Forests, because it's that kind of stuff is sweeping the nation at this point in time.
Yeah, by association, Stop Ghostwood.
Yeah. And I thought it was interesting, just given the other sort of Ben thing going on with Donna's mom, that there was nothing weird here with him and Doc Hayward, and Doc Hayward seemed very into the idea. I just thought it was interesting.
Well, at this point, nothing has been expressly stated about Doc versus Ben.
Right.
Like, there's been no confrontation at this point, so he thinks everything's still hunky-dory.
Right.
So there wouldn't be any animosity there if everything's still just going as it has been.
Right. Well, I guess, too, at this point, because I'm already thinking of the scene later at the Hayward house, but that's true. At this point, he's only had that one confrontation with Donna about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Pete has his suspicions. It's going to cut into Catherine's deal about Ghostwood.
Exactly. Yeah. That one makes sense. Yep.
That one does make sense. And of course, Mayor Milford's just trying to get Lana to win. So he'll go with any idea.
The idea has merit.
Yeah, guys, this year, it's not going to be a Jiggle Fest.
It's not Jiggle Fest 89?
It's not a Jiggle Fest this year. I know you want it to be. Yeah, everybody has their differing opinions on why the theme should be what it is.
Ben leaves, and as he's leaving, Donna has a sad, she almost looks like she's crying.
She is.
Yeah, she's like just devastated being in the same room as Ben Horn.
As her dad.
Cutting to the core of her.
She's watching her new dad's behavior, and it's just striking her through and through.
Yeah. She's sitting with Bobby and Shelley.
Mm-hmm. Bobby smells a fix. So public speaking has never been a strong suit of Shelley's.
Bobby's got it covered.
Bobby does have it covered.
He'll write it for her. All good.
So, I mean, I'm not a huge fan of public speaking. I was able to do some presentations in school.
Mm-hmm.
And, way to go, man.
Yeah, thanks. And I always hated doing it. Like my senior presentation was a nightmare. I did really well on it, but it was a nightmare. Another kid that I was in that graduating class with threw up during his, so I did better.
Who was it?
Oh, I can't remember his name. Jamie something.
Lannister?
Yeah, Jamie Lannister threw up during his senior presentation, put it in the books. But, yeah. That.
Look at him now.
Nadine and Mike enter.
Donna, hi.
Nadine's going to enter the competition, and Mike and Bobby get a chance to catch up.
They do. They go have a moment away from everyone. Mm-hmm. Bobby's scared.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's very curious in his sudden interest in fossils, the life of fossils.
It's not what it looks like. You might think it looks like I'm dating an older woman. You are. Straight up.
So
she's only 18.
So he Mike proceeds to tell him about the combination of superhuman strength and sexual maturity. And whatever the answer to what that results in, he whispers into Bobby's ear. It's a very loud whoa. It's almost as loud as the other time Mike was in the roadhouse when he screamed, Donna.
Donna! It's true.
there's a similarity there.
Yeah, Bobby's a bit taken back by whatever it is that he was whispered to by Mike.
I just like that Mike gives him a wink. He's like, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I thought he winked to Nadine.
Oh, is that what he is? I thought he winked. Okay, he winked.
Yeah, he winks to Nadine.
That's right. He winks
to
Nadine. Oh, okay. All I remember was the wink.
And she loves it.
Oh, man.
So, oof. I don't want to know what it is, but I have to know.
I have no idea what it could be.
Back to Martell Manor. Kathy and Truman are having a chat about Tyler's favorite character, Josie.
Hold on. Right before we get here. Immediately before we get there, there is a 2-second fade-in shot of the petroglyph and Wyndham Earl holding a crossbow.
That's true. There is that. You're right.
Just for, so fast and for no reason.
And for no reason.
She's like, hey, don't forget.
Well, we haven't forgotten. I mean, this was just like this a scene or two ago. I mean, there's no time for me to forget. This is one of the most important things happening in the series right now. I didn't need the reminder.
It's like, keep it fresh in your head that there is a wall painting and Wyndham Earl with a crossbow. Now let's go to the Martell Manor. Sorry, Patrick. You were saying. I just had
no,
to get that.
No, I was
there.
Just saying, Truman's still just, he needs answers. He's not getting the answers about Josie.
He's not getting the answers he wants. He has gotten the answers. He's just not hearing what he wants to hear because his only memory of Josie is her being beautiful.
And Kathy can't hate her?
Nope. For everything she's ever tried to do to her and her family, she can't seem to hate her.
I'm puzzled.
And Truman, like...
Like that box.
Like that box, you're right.
Well, she was just unbelievably beautiful. Why would you hate her? I mean, look at her. Come on.
So Tyler, tell me here. You have the episode pulled up?
Sure.
Are you listening to it? What is Pete? I believe when Pete walks in the room, he says something, but he says Bob? Something about Bob?
Does he say Bob?
Wowee Bob.
That's it. Wowee Bob.
Yep.
I couldn't remember exactly it. I'm pretty sure he says something about Bob because my ears perked up.
He says, we got some lookers in the competition this year. We got some real jigglers.
I just like that he said Bob because it was just a throwaway line that it means nothing, but in the context of the show, it means everything.
Does it?
I think so.
I think Wowee Bob is very significant. Perfect.
Sure.
Yeah, the competition, whether they like it or not, is going to be a jiggle fest. He's stoked on it. He tries to take a look at the puzzle box that Catherine has, ends up dropping it, and Catherine's not a fan. But this ends up working out in their favor, because by dropping the box, they find a box in the box.
What?
Is this where he tries to immediately drop it?
I know!
It's my box in a box.
Wait.
Hey, it worked once. I was holding it just like this. It just tries dropping it again.
And it's just phases of the moon mm-hmm. with some zodiac symbols around mm-hmm. it. Is that what they are?
I believe so. Yeah, I only recognize them as just some sort of runes going around the phase of the moon. But yeah, I love that's his solution is just try to drop it again and see what else happens. But yeah, they've got a new puzzle here.
What does it mean?
Truman seems to take notice of it. Kind of takes it in his hand and gets a look on his face like, this is what I'm going to do.
The director said I should do this.
You guys ready to do a nature study?
Sure.
Yeah. Let's go out on the lake.
Annie and Cooper on a boat.
Take a good hard look.
They are on a boat. Those are back-to-back Lonely Island references. Mm-hmm.
They are.
Yeah, Cooper and Annie in a boat. Afloat.
20-second challenge, Dave.
20-second challenge.
Cooper and Annie are in a boat. They're getting to know each other a little bit more. Annie says that she mostly lived in her head, and she had strange neighbors, which I thought was a double. She's only ever had one boyfriend, and her suicide attempt was because of that boy. They give a kiss, and her instincts say to trust Coop.
You nailed it.
It was 14 seconds.
I'll take it. So the icing on the cake for this scene for me was the return of the gazebo.
Yeah.
The one gazebo in Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not the only appearance in this episode.
Nope. Wyndham Earl is watching them from afar, from the bank. Not in disguise, but just as himself.
Yep. No, he's disguised as Pete Martell.
Yeah, this is his Pete Martell disguise. Yeah, so he has clearly taken notice of Annie as Coop's love interest, which does not bode well for Miss Blackburn.
Nope.
I really feel like the next scene should have been the 22nd challenge, our Onophiliac Soiree. So we're at something to do with wine.
Winefest 89.
So it's Dick Tremaine hosting a wine tasting at the lounge at the Great Northern.
To me, it seems more like a class.
Well, Andy thinks it's a class.
There really is no point to this.
Nope.
But I do think it's funny.
I
got some laughs. I did get some laughs out of it.
I did do some
Or
chuckles.
When Dick snaps at Andy.
Yes. No, Andy, don't swallow. Don't taste it yet. I love that Dick Tremaine almost had a small panic attack as Andy was being bad at wine tasting. I don't think there's any point to this, except I think the point of this scene is for Lucy to understand how much she doesn't like Dick. I mean, she spits on Dick.
She should have already known this.
Yeah, I think the entire point of this scene with the wine tasting and Dick's behavior toward both Andy and Lucy, plus his behavior towards Alana, is just to solidify that Lucy is seeing shades of him to verify that she does not want to have him around in her life, is my takeaway. Are we ready?
I am. I'm ready to deep dive on.
So I know I jumped the gun a little bit last episode.
You did.
About this interaction
here. A little bit of a spoiler for Tyler. I'll never forget on one of the early episodes, Tyler was like, if you guys ever spoil, I'm leaving this show. He's like, but I'll still produce it. Record it. But I'm leaving the show. But thank you for still sticking around, Tyler.
Yeah, thank you for sticking
through welcome.
The last few episodes. So that we can get here.
I mean, it wasn't a major thing you said. You said to take a look, Sonny, it's going to happen again. Did you mention the kiss?
I did not, no.
Okay, I couldn't go. Because when you said that, my thought was, oh my God, did he say something about the kiss? Was that why this got started?
No, I just got ahead of myself on the quote.
Yeah, another just great scene full of fun Gordon Cole lines.
Just all around, this is a really fun scene.
It's fun.
I had a blast the entire time.
Yeah, I love. So it opens. It just shows Shelley and Gordon at the booth, which I just love. It's like, yes, they're still hanging out.
And I really appreciated that there is still the continuity where when he's speaking to Shelley, it's normal.
Yeah.
Just room voice, indoor voice.
That's why he's hanging out with her.
Yeah. And like never drops it. Everybody else that he talks to, he's yelling at. It's specifically when he's speaking to Shelley. Because he can hear her clear as a bell.
You're right, because when he sees Coop and Annie walk in, when he sees Annie, he screams, "This world of Twin Peaks seems to be filled with beautiful women.
But only one of which I can hear."
Oh, man.
Yeah,
I love it.
Cooper and Annie are able to meet up with them at the Double R, and he invites them to join him for pie.
With the quickest service I have ever seen.
Extremely fast service. And it's like they knew they were coming and ordered 3 slices of pie per person.
Wow. I hope
the foreknowledge that they were going to be popping in.
I think Gordon Cole's a big tipper. I bet he left a big tip.
I bet he did too. Yeah, as they're sitting down to pie and getting to kind of get acquainted, Bad Boy Bobby busts in.
Yep.
Just as Gordon Cole is about to land one on Shelley.
Yep. Because that's the thing he wants before he leaves, because he'll regret it.
Right.
Which I'm like, you come back anytime. But yeah. I almost in a meta way, I was like, he knows the show is ending, and then Gordon Cole's not coming back to Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
That's how I almost interpret it. Like, okay.
I really liked Madge Namek's acting as he's talking to her. He's like,
yeah.
And I know that if I don't kiss you now, and her just kind of like, what?
Yeah, it's great.
What's about to happen?
Yeah.
But then she's all in. Yeah. She's all about it. Yeah. Even after Bobby freaks out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She's like, yeah.
Oh, Bobby's in charge? Watch this.
Clearly not. Gordon Cole is in charge. We've known this since day one. He's the boss. Not Bobby.
Right.
Not Bobby.
What does Bobby say when he walks in?
It's like, what the hell's going on?
Yeah.
What you're seeing is a 3-quarter view.
Of two adults.
Yeah.
Sharing a tender moment.
And he gives her a couple smooches, and Bobby storms out, and that's our scene.
Amazing scene.
Yeah.
So good.
Is that the end of Gordon Cole?
For now.
Yeah, for right now. But yeah, it's a great scene. It just shows Coop being very happy with Annie and Gordon being happy with Shelley. It's wholesome. It's good.
Yeah.
What's not good is going back to the lounge. We're back to the wine tasting.
Back to the Great Northern.
Lucy thinks that the wine tastes woody. Dick Tremaine says, no, wrong.
Which is an adequate wine description sometimes.
Also an adequate description of the Great Northern.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Lana tastes banana, Andy tastes chocolate, and those seem correct. So Lucy kind of gets a chuckle from the crowd and she stands up and says, well, why don't we just get a banana split and leave the wine out of it?
Great line, Lucy.
We did fail to mention that every time Dick smells his wine, the gauze on his nose gets dunked in every time.
Gets stained a little more, a little more.
Now it's just like soaked in wine. No.
That is a good detail.
This isn't the only thing happening at the Great Northern.
No, it's not. Alex? Guys, love is hell.
He's leaving.
Yeah.
Cooper drinking milk?
I think Cooper's drinking milk, and Jack is having some shots. But I think Jack's just kind of struggling with the idea that he is in love with Audrey. He's got it bad for her. Coop's got it bad for Annie. And they have some good conversation here about, I guess, just different viewpoints on what it's like to be in love.
Yeah.
Like it can be a struggle, or it can be the greatest joy of your life. Like it can take a crowbar to a heart that's been locked too long.
And then Tyler gets his, hopefully, wish.
Oh, he's gone.
Yeah, Jack gets a telegram, and we don't know what it says. We don't know what it says, but he's going to have to check out that night. Get out of Dodge.
Bye-bye, BZ. Discovery Zone.
Discovery. I think that'd be a great name for a biscuit restaurant, like a breakfast place. Discovery Zone.
Yes. Would they sell deviled eggs there?
Oh, you know they would.
What kind of menu is that?
Biscuits and deviled eggs.
Do you hate your body? Do you want to eat like a baby with money? Come to the Discovery Zone.
It sounds like it's a museum for Biscoff cookies.
To the Hayward House.
Speaking of food.
Yes.
Holy cow.
Yeah, a feast big enough for a family of five.
Yeah, for three.
Right. I know, where are the other two?
They're dead.
No more Harriet. No more Gersten.
Harriet and Gerson are locked in their appropriate closets for this episode.
They're doing homework.
I mean, school's going great.
Yeah, right. She hadn't been in weeks.
At least we've actually seen her at the high school.
Yeah.
Like, and I mean, I say that as in the last six episodes or so. She's at least, that's at least a character we've seen at the high school.
Yeah, she has been going to school at least one day.
Haven't seen Bobby there. Haven't seen Audrey there. Audrey's going to Seattle. She doesn't need to go to school anymore.
Audrey's in Seattle right now. Yep.
I think Bobby's lost his status as football captain.
Well, businessman Bobby's got his priorities mixed up right now.
Business boy.
Yeah, this is Donna's opportunity to confront her mother about how she knows Ben Horn. And my girl Eileen just wants some peas, man.
My girl Eileen.
Donna, would you please pass the peas? How do you know Ben Horn? I would like some peas, please.
Go to her.
Her mom gets a lot of peas. Like,
yeah.
Feels like that's all she wants. Like six helpings.
That's what you call nervous serving.
Well, Donna tries to stick it to him that she's going to enter the pageant, and if she wins, she's going to go overseas.
Yeah. Trying to give him a harsh case of stick it to demand. Her scholarship. And take my scholarship overseas.
Yeah, she's gonna take that scholarship
overseas. This scholarship is not applicable to overseas universities.
The Miss Twin Peaks scholarship does not get you a free pass to Canada.
Does not travel to Cambridge or Oxford or University of Phoenix.
Donna doesn't get the answers she wants from her mother. She just tells her that she pretty much knows what roses are about, that she knows she's involved with Ben Horn, and that it's not about what do you call it? Charity work. Owl!
Yeah.
Immediately owls. This is a good scene. So the gazebo is at the forefront once again.
Yep.
This is definitely so that Wyndham Earl is telling Coop, like, hey, I saw you here. So this is where I'm going to put my special box. Twin Peaks does not have a bomb squad.
They do not. They just have a rock.
This is a really elaborate way of opening this box. So
it really is. I was so confused.
It's a real Rube Goldberg machine of getting this box open.
I got beef.
Oh, you got beef?
How did he get this here?
He built it in the gazebo.
I mean, it's not sturdily put together, clearly.
Yeah, so it would have fallen apart on the way there. Right.
Yeah, he did get it here unnoticed, but in the same way, he also got a corpse into the police station without being noticed.
Seems a little easier than a chess piece.
Yeah, well...
This isn't... Don't just call it a chess piece.
So before we open this box...
A paper mache.
Before we open this box, Coop mentions that he has been bewildered by Wyndham Earl's tactics as of late, and so they're taking every precaution about what could possibly come out of this box. Is it going to be a bomb? Is it going to be a zombie? We don't know, but we're prepared on all fronts.
I would love it if it was Dick Tremaine.
Like dead or like with a machine gun?
Just in a box.
Or just standing in the box?
Just Dick in a box.
I see what you did there.
There it is.
But no, the solution for Coop is to tie some of the caution tape to a rock, put that rock on the edge of the gazebo.
He's definitely done this before.
Yeah, you don't just come up with this.
There's no brainstorming moment at all. He's just having a conversation with
while
Harry
he's setting it up.
Yeah.
He already knows exactly what he's going to do. He walks up and is like, all right, I'm going to get this rock. Tie caution tape to the rock. Other end to the obvious handle on the box.
That says pull.
Yeah.
Or pull me or whatever.
Walks Truman back to a safe distance. Andy gets everybody behind the cruisers.
I loved it.
Because we don't know if this is a swarm of bees. We don't.
Coop told Andy to tell everyone to get behind their cars. And just in the background, you can hear him. Agent Cooper said, get behind.
Yeah, that's a B plot to the scene, is that Andy is not being heeded.
Yeah, that was great.
Agent Cooper wants everybody behind their cruisers. Yeah, we're going to.
Yeah, I loved that. That was
with
fantastic.
With our stick and box setup here, we have just really much a shoot a rock, pop a box situation. Shoots the rock off the ledge, and the weight
Classic.
Of the walk. Weight of the walk? Weight of the rock.
Way to the
pulls
lock.
The pull me handle and the box falls open, and it is our fully constructed paper mache chess piece trap with dead Ted Raimi inside and a note that says, next time it will be someone you know.
Because we don't know this guy.
Right, you totally don't know this
also,
guy. Here's another drifter. It's almost like...
Talk about some good,
oh no.
good handwriting.
Yeah, it's calligraphy. Yeah, so for me, for it to say next time it will be someone you know, it makes me wonder why... Why wouldn't Wyndham just go ahead and make a big move here? Because that's his second warning shot, for all intents and purposes. Like, if you're this psychotic person who is trying to get to somebody on a deep level, well, why does he get two outs?
I don't know.
That is the end of the episode, is the reveal that we've got him victimized in a fully constructed chess piece statue, our victim this time.
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. I mean, it's a perfectly fine episode of Twin Peaks. For me, there continues to be a lot of intriguing stuff with the Alcave, Major Briggs, Cooper, Wyndham Earl stuff. And then you throw in a dash of the funny here and there with the Gordon Cole scene at the Double R.
A dollop of Daisy.
I enjoyed this episode. It was fun.
I did too. There was plenty of comedy, plenty of content. I think that the wine tasting stuff.
There wasn't plenty of content.
Was there not?
Because they had to come up with that whole wine tasting stuff.
Yeah, the wine tasting was all filler for sure. Overall, I think that everything that they intended to do with this episode was accomplished well. I loved Ted Raimi's bit. Just that over the top violence and humor from every character you get out of him. I really, really enjoyed it. Yeah, strong for me.
Are we playing that game again?
No, we're not playing the game again.
I was so good at it.
I've been practicing all week.
Well, you blew it. You had your chance and you blew it.
I'm our debt.
Ted Raimi. So before we get to our damn fine lines of the night, I did want to bring up, I know I've been harping a lot on Ted Raimi's cameo this episode. It sparked me to kind of look up anything else he might have done with David Lynch. And I came across something called the Make a Film Foundation that I didn't know existed, but apparently the same way that there is a Make-A-Wish Foundation, the Make-A-Films are able to get together notable actors and directors to make terminally ill patients' film dreams come true. So they come up with an idea for a short film, and they make it so that their idea can come to life and kind of leave their legacy that way. It's a really, really cool foundation. And one of the films is actually directed by Sam Raimi, Ted Raimi's brother, who you know from Evil Dead and Spider-Man. There's a short film called The Black Ghiandola, and it's a Make a Film Foundation presentation starring J.K. Simmons, Laura Dern, David Lynch, Johnny Depp, Jade Pettyjohn from Righteous Gemstones, Chad Coleman from Walking Dead. It's actually a pretty good, like, 15-minute zombie movie that David Lynch is in for 5 seconds. But I just thought it was a really cool tie-in. Like, I don't know. It's worth a look. You can find it for free on Vimeo. It's a fun watch. And David Lynch had a hand in it. So it's pretty cool.
Nice. Yeah, I had no idea about that. I'll definitely check it out.
Yeah, totally.
Nice detective work, Agent Jackson.
Thanks, man. So, I guess it's time to move along into our damn fine lines of the night. See, I went first last time. Tyler, do you want to take this one?
I'll go.
Say, have you had any luck with this thing?
Oh! Butterfingers!
Butterfingers!
I laughed out loud. It was great.
That was great.
Yeah, a line that needs no introduction. That's super good.
A rare Kath quote.
Yeah, Kath's on the line this time.
Where's Andrew?
Who?
Andrew Packard, Dick Packard's father.
Dick Packard?
I don't believe in ghosts.
I don't believe in ghosts.
That's Echo.
He's dead.
Yeah, but yep. Andrew Packard was the ghost I don't believe in.
I'll go next. Yeah. Mine comes from the scene at the sheriff's station. Cooper is there with Major Briggs, and he basically is telling them that all of these things he believes are coming together, and I just really liked the way he phrased this quote. Let's hear it.
Major, we need your help, but I am unable to accurately describe for you how or why.
Go on.
The Twin Peaks Sheriff's Department is currently involved in several disparate investigations. The disappearance of known felon Leo Johnson, the appearance of my former partner and suspected murderer Wyndham Earl, and the discovery of petroglyphs of an unknown origin in a place called Owl Cave. Now, it would seem logic would dictate that these investigations be considered separate entities. However, I believe otherwise. I believe that these mysteries are not separate entities, but are in fact complementary verses of the same song. Now, I cannot hear it yet, but I can feel it. And that is enough for me to proceed.
I can feel it too, Coop.
That was definitely my backup for line of the night.
Yeah, I just like it was well phrased. I like it a lot.
Yeah, that really spoke to me, just the way he put that. Very, very cool line. Mine, which will be a shocker to no one, comes from Gordon Cole at the Double R Diner as Bobby enters.
What the hell's going on?
You are witnessing a front three-quarter view of two adults sharing a tender moment.
Acts like he's never seen a kiss before.
Gordon?
Take another look, Sonny. It's going to happen again.
Just bosses the situation.
It is happening again.
It is happening again. Well, fellas.
Damn fine.
Well, fellas, I know we have feelings about this episode. I think in general, we like it pretty well, but we got to give it numbers. Because
I say 1 to 5 on James Hurley's forehead. I think we should call it Talking Foreheads.
Talking
foreheads.
I can't. I just can't.
James!
There was no Big Ed this episode.
There was no Big Ed this episode.
Or Audrey.
Or Audrey.
And that is definitely going to be.
Is that
going to
affect your score?
In... Yes.
But BZ might be going away.
That doesn't balance.
I was about to say,
out.
At what point is it a wash? Like, how many positives to wash out the negative of Audrey not being in this episode?
Tyler, what's your rating?
What was my rating last week?
3.5
3.5 last week, yep.
It's pretty high. It's moving in the right direction. BZ's on his way out. Audrey was not present. That's enough to go down one whole forehead.
Where does that leave you?
Probably 3.5
3.5 again?
I think we're at 3.5
Pop it off.
Just 3.5
Patrick, I believe you're next in line.
I am, and I'm feeling pretty much the same as last week, just like Tyler is. I'm going with 4 foreheads.
That is so high.
Just 4
So I've given this one some thought.
2
It's not 2. It's not 2.
He's giving it a 5 for sure.
I've given this one some thought, and... I really appreciate the amount of humor. I appreciate the amount of spooky. I appreciate the return of the gazebo, the triumphant return of the gazebo.
That's a whole forehead for you.
Fantastic imagery, good comedy.
No Audrey.
There is the whole scene about the wine tasting. There's no Audrey, but there's also no James.
Oh,
5 So it's... You know what?
Whoa.
4 4 foreheads.
Oh.
Just 4
Ladies and gentlemen, the exact same scores as last
week.
We're
just shy of perfection here.
Talking foreheads.
We're in the home stretch. There's only a few episodes of season 2 left.
It's true. Yeah,
three more?
3 episodes left. And then I'm not sure what we're going to do. So I know that I personally am going to have some life changes coming up pretty soon, so my time might be a little accounted for once we finish up season 2. But we should be moving on to Fire Walk With Me shortly after that. We'll take care of what we need to take care of, and we'll reconvene, and we'll start putting out some content again. In the meantime, thank you guys so much for continuing to listen. I know that we have people that are waiting for these, apparently. As soon as these episodes go live, we get listens across the
board. It blows my mind.
Yeah, it's wild. So
waking up Saturday morning and seeing how many people listened is a strange, but
making
really
some
awesome
cereal
thing.
Watching some Recess and checking our stats.
That's right. But yeah, and if you really are enjoying the show and don't mind taking a few minutes to give us a rating on Apple Podcasts, we would certainly appreciate it.
A rate and review really goes a long way, helping us get noticed, and letting people know that you like us makes them want to give us a try. So reach out, tell your friends, tell your family, rate and review Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podbean. We're on now.
What?
Yeah, Podbean, the Android app that never works.
Okay, great.
But it's the only one with a good UI that I like, but it crashes constantly. But yeah, find us wherever you get your podcasts. Give us a rate and review. Let people know. Let's get out there. Let's get the Egg Deviler some follows at the Egg Deviler on Instagram.
He did get 1.
We're trying to get double digits.
I'm not. Oh. So he's at 9 now.
Uh-oh.
Only 1 new follow this week, but it appears to be...
A lady?
A new...
dude lady?
No. It is Guy Dudeman with a new Twitter handle.
It's the same guy?
Yeah.
Second account?
At G Dudeman.
He's back again.
So,
guess who's
I
back?
I appreciate bumping my numbers up.
Talking back, can I turn my chair backwards and sit in it and get real with you guys for a second?
You're sitting in your chair backwards?
No, I'm about to.
He's doing it. He's doing it right now. I'm watching him.
About to get real. I'm getting real with the listeners. I just turned my chair backwards, so you
you're
know
like,
this is serious.
You're like the coolest teacher in school.
So you know it's time to listen up.
You're real hip.
You could be the 10th follower for the Egg Deviler. It could be you. You could make
Do we have anything
history.
To send?
To send? I mean, you could send them a to batch of deviled eggs.
Handmade. Homemade.
Homemade
There's
deviled
a homemade
eggs.
Deviled egg platter.
You will get a baker's dozen.
I love that you don't tweet, you don't post on your Instagram, but you're just getting followers every week for nothing. For well, not for nothing. It's for shout-outs. I get it. People like to hear their names. That's fine.
If you haven't already, you have to make the Egg Deviler's profession public figure. Immediately. This is how you can become an influencer, as they call it these days.
My bio says I devil eggs.
Well, change your occupation to public figure and
There's
watch,
not
your
an
numbers,
occupation spot.
Watch your numbers skyrocket. I'll just put it on there. Just put it somewhere.
Just write occupation public.
Yeah, just write it.
Oh, man.
Oh, society. But
follow us on Twitter at Talkin' Backward.
Yeah, do that thing. Reach out to us at talkingbackwardspodcast@gmail.com if you would like to email us. That's how you can do it.
Anchor.
Roadhouse.
Anchor.
Oh, guys, we'll be back with Anchor. You next week, hopefully, for The Path to the Black Lodge. Thank you for listening to Talking Backwards. Project Blue Book.
Does anybody watch that?
What's that?
Project Blue Book?
No.
Is it for real though?
Does anybody watch that?
For real?
Yes! On the History Channel.
Check it out.
I'm gonna check it out. Cool.